I could not tell you even approximately how long this ride lasted. I only know that we seemed to turn and turn and often went down a spiral stair into the very heart of the earth. Even then it may be that my head was turning, but I don't think so. No, my mind was quite clear. At last César raised his nostrils, sniffed the air, and quickened his pace a little. I felt a moistness in the air, and César stopped. The darkness had lifted. A sort of bluey light surrounded us. We were on the edge of a lake whose leaden water stretched into the distance, into the darkness. But the blue light lit up the bank, and I saw a little boat fastened to an iron ring on the wharf.
A boat?
Yes, but I knew that all that existed, and that there was nothing supernatural about that underground lake and boat. But think of the exceptional conditions in which I arrived upon that shore. I don't know whether the effects of the cordial had worn off when the man's shape lifted me into the boat, but my terror began all over again. My gruesome escort must have noticed it, for he sent César back, and I heard his hoofs trampling up a staircase while the man jumped into the boat, untied the rope that held it, and seized the oars. He rowed with a quick, powerful stroke, and his eyes under the mask never left me. We slipped across the noiseless water in the bluey light which I told you of. Then we were in the dark again, and we touched shore. And I was once more taken up in the man's arms. I cried aloud. And then, suddenly, I was silent, dazed by the light. Yes, a dazzling light in the midst of which I had been put down. I sprang to my feet. I was in the middle of a drawing room that seemed to me to be decorated, adorned and furnished with nothing but flowers. Flowers both magnificent and stupid, because of the silk ribbons that tied them to baskets, like those which they sell in the shops on the boulevards. They were much too civilized flowers, like those which I used to find in my dressing room after a first night. And in the midst of all these flowers stood the black shape of the man in the mask, with arms crossed, and he said, "Don't be afraid, Christine. You are in no danger." It was the voice. My anger equaled my amazement. I rushed at the mask and tried to snatch it away so as to see the face of the voice. The man said, "You are in no danger so long as you do not touch the mask." And taking me gently by the wrists, he forced me into a chair, and then went down on his knees before me and said nothing more. His humility gave me back some of my courage, and the light restored me to the realities of life. However extraordinary the adventure might be, I was now surrounded by mortal, visible, tangible things. The furniture, the hangings, the candles, the vases, and the very flowers in their baskets, of which I could almost have told whence they came and what they cost, were bound to confine my imagination to the limits of a drawing room quite as commonplace as any that at least had the excuse of not being in the cellars of the opera. I had, no doubt, to do with a terrible eccentric person who, in some mysterious fashion, had succeeded in taking up his abode here, under the opera house, 5 stories below the level of the ground.